Hi, and welcome to Let's Talk Safety. I'm your host, Dylan Sutherland from Protector Safety Gear. Throughout this series, we'll be interviewing industry experts to provide our audience with valuable insights on various categories of PPE. Topics will range from selection and standards to maintenance and care. This should ultimately assist you in selecting fit-for-purpose safety solutions for your site. From these discussions, we will create resources such as Toolbox Talk downloads and blogs, all of which will be available on our website, www.protector.co.za, for download.
So I think the first thing is, obviously, like you mentioned, we'll make sure this is available to all the listeners through the Toolbox Talk. But there's a few concerns, I mean, just on your last point, and I've got a few notes for the other points as well, is how does that happen? I mean, do people actually do that test in the... because what you're saying is sound. What you're saying is perfectly clear that it makes sense that when I entered this business, I'd already had damage to my ears. I can't sue this company for hearing loss in 30 years' time. But do they? Do they do those tests?
I think what you'll find is with your companies that have a really strong safety culture, yes. Particularly your multinationals, your larger mining groups, this forms very much part of a routine medical.
Yeah.
So there'll be a list of items within the medical process. And yes, it does happen. If you had to look at the entire country as a sample, there's obvious gaps.
Yeah.
These things come with, firstly, the knowledge and the compliance of implementing such things. But there's also a cost to it, and there's also a time factor. So you can quite safely assume that no, every employee or every employer that has a raised noise level, no, not everybody is doing this. And this is the message we need to get out.
And I'm actually more from a point of, you're 100% right. I mean, we've spoken a bit earlier today on the tick box. So safety being kind of handled as a tick box. What's the first tick box you need to do? You need to have a medical. Do the companies actually realize, because you're spot on. I mean, yes, you've got your multinationals, your mines. They've got a very stringent and generally in-house medical, exactly as per what they want. Outside, if we had to talk about construction in a smaller company, for instance, I mean, you just need to have a medical that says, I'm medically fit to work. It's ticked all the boxes. Whether or not the company actually realizes what kind of backup and support that could give them, by knowing that this person's hearing right now, and I just don't think that is always connecting, that they might very well be doing it. They're just not sure through the medical process that that's one of the tests. You need to do your audio testing through your medical.
Correct. So if you're lining yourself to a compliant point with the Occupational Health and Safety Act, you'll be aware of this and you'll be doing this. Practically, no, we don't see it everywhere.
And documenting it, like you said.
And keeping record thereof, exactly. So there are some, you know, if you had to ask what is the very first checkpoint, I believe the biggest challenge with noise-induced hearing loss is educating the end user.
Yeah.
I think we need to change our perception of this is a responsibility, and you know, as a safety officer, I'm going to walk through my plant and, you know, kind of find the people who are not adhering to the rules. We need to change that perspective from almost the teacher-pupil principle, you know, stay in line or there's a repercussion, to rather, do you not want to arrive home and be able to hear your daughter sing a basic song or enjoy your music at home? We need to change. These are real problems that affect people's quality of life. So if the perspective is changed and we can get people to see and believe the changes it'll have in their personal lives, I think you'll get the greatest change on ground level.
100% agree. I mean, it's just a simple concept of you giving the appropriate tools to protect yourself. If you feel like you're being instructed to do it, you're more than likely going to resist.
That's it.
If you're working together and we understand the bigger picture is, look, we want you working here for the next 20, 30 years. For you to work here for the next 20, 30 years, you need to be able to communicate in here. This is the tools that will make sure you keep that. I think that's a very different relationship between employer and employee.
Correct.
You mentioned a couple of things. I just want to jump on those 7 points that you mentioned. Because I think there's quite an interesting discussion to be had. So you speak about we record the noises in each area. And I think I want to just tap into this quickly because, not even quickly, into a bit of detail about it, because the reality is, and that's what I've experienced from a safety point, is you go into a company, they use this earplug. No matter what they're doing throughout the different businesses. I mean, one business, as you've just said now in your example, a generator and a sewing machine, those are two seriously different sounds. Yes, we can eliminate one through engineering controls. But the probability of different operations in a business applying the same solution in terms of hearing protection, that's a problem, isn't it?
A big one. When it comes to... Right, ways you can identify a human being. Okay, you've obviously got your DNA, you've got your fingerprint, your biometrics, you've got your dental records. You can also identify a human being by a cross-section of the ear canal. We're all different. In fact, you'll have a different right ear canal to your left ear canal. So the theory of one size fits all has never been less true, you know, when you look at hearing protection. Sadly, that bucks the trend on, you know, simplifying things as an employer, you know, and we tend to look for those one-size-fits-all solutions. But it's almost near impossible to achieve when it comes to hearing protection. You do need to have a different product per area if there are different noise levels.
Yeah.
But also looking at the individual, there should be a process in place, a code of practice that says, if we've checked this and that is not a solution for you, option B, option C. There is a new product available, which is in-ear fit testing, essentially. It's a kit with a headphone where you can test the baseline test, put in the earplug, and then you can test the residual noise. It's done over a few minutes, and this can be tested against any earplug in the market. It's not a UVX-specific earplug.
Yeah.
So this exact fit test system that I'm referring to could be forming part of that code of practice. All right. So you can do a more basic informal testing and generate the documentation and compliance using that. And that could be a good midpoint. You know, at least identifying this department requires this level SNR, this department requires this SNR. It's a good start point. You don't necessarily have to go to the point of step one, every single individual should be having something different. Finding the balance as a start point would be a really good progression from where we are today.
Yeah. I do think if you can, I think this is what you eat and sleep. So you understand it really well. Give us an example of what is at a 80 dB rating. What is at a 90 dB rating?
Sure.
Just so that there's context to what you're talking about.
Okay. So we think of decibels, so the unit of measure for sound, think of decibels as volume, not necessarily the case. So volume in your car radio, for example, if you're currently on volume 10, you want to crank it up, you jump up to 20. Decibels work a little bit differently. So it's measuring the energy, the acoustic energy. And by going up in increments of 3, you're doubling the volume.
Okay.
So 83 decibels is double the volume of 80 decibels. So the room for risk or room for error in just a few decibels is quite high.
Yeah.
If I, just to give practical examples, I think when we're whispering to each other, we're somewhere around 30 to 40 decibels. Normal conversation would be around 50 to 60 decibels. Yelling, you may achieve around 70 to 80 decibels. And as I mentioned, going up in increments of 3, a circular saw, incredibly loud, would be around 100 decibels.
Okay.
A power drill, maybe in the 90s, and a jet, let's say a jet engine taking off next to your ear would be somewhere around 130 decibels.
Okay, and then let's put that into practical. You've mentioned that it's an 8-hour work shift. That decibel would determine the length of the work shift you could work in. So let's say I'm doing something at home and I'm drilling. What would that look like? How long can I drill for at the, you've said 90 decibels about?
Sure. So a lot of industrial equipment will have the, if you go home and inspect your lawnmower, for example. It may have a sticker on it that tells you the decibels that it emits.
Yeah.
And this is very common in the case of an industrial setting. So a rock drill operator, for example, drilling into the rock surface, that equipment typically by the mine would be selected based on its noise level it emits.
Okay.
And that would be documented on the data sheet of the device. But to answer your question, it's an 8-hour average, and that's what we protect against. Where the deviation is very high in contrast from your peak sounds to your average, Department of Labor has actually just now published this month, they've just promulgated new noise regulations that takes this into consideration. And at that point, you need to look at doubling up on your protection. So if you're wearing an earplug that's advertised as a 30 SNR, you need to now double up by adding an EMF on top of that for those peak times.
Are you saying earplug plus EMF over it?
Correct.
How would that work in terms of the SNR? I mean, does that give you, if it's a 30 SNR earplug and a 35 EMF, would that give you 65?
No. So, good question, because that's often how it's applied. Mm-hmm. You would hope that the exterior, in this case would be the capsule of the EMF, would block out the 35, the example you gave, and then you would be remaining with whatever the noise level is, less 35, and then you've got the earplug to defend it. Unfortunately, it doesn't work that way, but what you can do is take the higher of the two and then add 4 to 5 decibels. So you would take your 35, and on top of that, if it's a relatively high attenuating earplug underneath, you would then add 5 decibels to the protection factor. So you've gone from 35 to 40.
Yeah.
And if you're trying to get it back down to below 80, you could say 80 plus your 40. You can operate in average noise levels of 120 decibels with those two products in combination. Incredibly loud.
Yeah. But I think the reason I'm asking is I think it's critical. We'll also put a link on that new, I think it was it gazetted or was it published? Is it?
It's promulgated. What that means is there's still 18 months before it becomes law. And in this period, there's still technical committees that discuss certain factors, whether it should proceed or if there should be some changes.
But I do think that when people start seeing this, it's critical that they don't see it as doubling up in the protection, because that's where the risk sits.
Correct.
It's quite easy to say, okay, 30 and 35, I'm going to be protected to a 65 point. Nothing can hurt me.
Correct.
Where actually they might still be exposed.
Correct.
So you've just spoken about the doubling up. I think maybe just touch on what do you mean in terms of, I mean, you can't have an EMF on an EMF, I would assume. What are the kinds of products we can use when we're talking about hearing protection?
Okay, I think, let's touch on the four most common, all right? And maybe we'll look at the pros and cons on each one. So typically your earplugs, your reusable rubber type earplug is the most common because it has benefits that make it very practical to implement, right? You only need to replace it every 30 days. So the lifespan is pretty good. So the cost factor comes in, right? I mean, any hearing protection product relative to its benefit is incredibly cost effective. And we're talking about quite low cost products here.
Yeah.
But your reusable plug can be effective in achieving a seal. And the reusability of using it for 30 days is obviously very beneficial in terms of issuing, in terms of waste. It typically comes with a cord, easy to handle, and so it's generally widely accepted as the most common product we see in the South African market. The SNR there ranges from around your 2023 mark up to around 30-34. So you're able to get quite a high level of protection. The downside, because it's slightly harder material than a foam earplug, is for the wearers that are somewhat susceptible to inner ear irritations, it can be slightly less comfortable, especially if you're aiming for the higher SNR side. So your lower SNRs, obviously less material, less size, perhaps less flanges, and easier to insert and remove. your higher SNR products a bit more bulky, slightly less comfortable, depending, of course, on the individual and his or her ear canal dimensions. On the disposable side, you've got your polyurethane disposable foam earplugs. They're typically used for one shift, so you could go through a pair or two per day. Very good in clean, hygienic environments, because this product will need to be rolled down before inserted into the ear. So you roll down, compress the foam, reach over, lift your ear, because your ear canal is sloping downwards towards the outside. So by lifting your ear, you will straighten the ear canal, and your straight earplug canal easily insert into a straight canal. And then you'll just hold it there for a few seconds to allow it to expand effectively. You'll start to hear the environment on that side start to quieten down, and very high attenuation factors are achieved with these plugs because of that. The way that it expands to the exact dimensions of your ear canal, typically you get a slightly higher protection factor from your disposable earplugs in relation to its size. But you'll be disposing of them daily, so the waste factor is not ideal. And if you're in a dirty environment, you don't want to be putting dirt on that earplug before inserting it into the ear canal. Okay. Then you've got your earmuffs and your cap mounting or your helmet mounting earmuffs. Earmuffs, very convenient when it comes to, let's say, changing environments. If I'm somebody who needs to move from area A to B to C, A may have a requirement for hearing protection, B not, and C does. So I'm running between them all day. To stop, pause, insert a disposable earplug and throw it away again would obviously not be practical.
Yeah.
Having an earmuff on hand is a very quick donning process and doffing process, and it achieves the protection as advertised, as long as you've got a seal around the ear. In which case, things to consider is just, of course, if you have other PPE, is it colliding and breaking that seal, such as your safety eyewear or something like that? And also for employees that maybe have a infection in the ear or a concern in the ear with inserting and removing earplugs, that would be the way to go. Fourth one, your customized molded plugs, where we actually take a mold of the ear canal and we produce the product to match that canal 100%. Extremely comfortable, extremely durable, long-lasting. An initial cost outlay, it's a bit more expensive, but you will break even essentially over a 2 to 3 year period, in which case it really just becomes the most affordable form of hearing protection.
Yeah.
And having that perfect seal every time, very good for guaranteeing the attenuation factor.
And just on that last one, I mean, I think that's the least known about in the industry, is I also understand that those need to get almost, I don't know if the right word is recalibrated, but they need to be checked on an annual basis?
Correct. So annual calibration is recommended. You do have two options. One that has a variable attenuation, so the filter can actually be adjusted. Those need more frequent calibration due to the fact it can change over a period. If that product is bumped, knocked, dropped, we need to make sure that the attenuation setting has remained in place. If it's a fixed filter, your requirement for calibration will be less frequent, but the best practice would still be once a year, where a technician will come out and just check that there's still a good seal and a good attenuation.
Awesome. I think usually to wrap these up, we always ask, I mean, you've been, like you've mentioned now, 10 years in the industry. I think you would have seen some jaw-dropping instances and perspectives even. I mean, do you have any myths or usually we even see it from a sales point where somebody tries to baffle someone with incorrect information. Do you have any myths or points that are in the industry which are quite off that seem to be quite often believed?
I think the two we touched on earlier was initially thinking I need to protect my hands and my feet first. That's common everywhere I go. Not the case. If you see there's a risk on the hearing side, start there. You also need your ears to sense other safety concerns. You could hear, let's say, a failure in the factory sometimes before you see it. So your ears in themselves are also a defense mechanism or a safety product, you could say. Some myths, it only affects the elderly. We get that one often. That's entirely not true. The correlation between elderly people and hearing loss is simply because they've been exposed to more noise over a longer period. If you crammed that same amount of exposure into a newborn baby, that baby would be as deaf or as affected as the elderly person.
Yeah.
The myth of your hair cells growing back, not like, you know, other parts of the body where hair grows back if you shave it off, or like grass, it's not going to grow back. Unfortunately, once they collapse and are destroyed, they're not coming back. Okay, last myth, I think, is that my body gets used to it. You touched on it earlier. No, entirely false. And sadly, you actually just becoming a stat in hearing loss. And I think what I do also want to say to all the employees out there, satisfying the safety officer by placing something in your ear is something we need to stop. We're fooling ourselves. Insert the earplug. If you don't know how to insert the earplug, learn how to insert the earplug and do it for your own selfish reasons, your own quality of life. Live a better life. You know, have the ability to hear and all the beauty that comes with it. And don't see it as a compliance factor. See it as a real part of life, a quality of life, and you can live life to the fullest.
Awesome. I appreciate that. I have one that I want to understand, and I think because you understand hearing so well, there's an understanding that frequency, people can hear different frequencies. Does that happen with damage? I mean, sometimes you'll switch on a TV and you can hear a high frequency and somebody might not hear that same frequency. Is that through damage and generally linked to getting older, or how does that work where you lose that frequency?
So if you have the full 40,000 hair cells we spoke of earlier that you're born with without any hearing loss, typically the range, audible range to a human being is from 20 hertz through to 20,000 hertz,
mm-hmm.
right? The lower the frequency, the deeper it's your bass, essentially, your lower, deeper sounds. Your higher frequency is more like your treble, okay? And that's the range, 20 to 20,000. Right. So there are frequencies outside of that that are not audible to human beings. And when you start to lose your hearing, so those 40,000 hair cells in that snail-like cochlear structure,
yeah.
the first line of defense is the first hair cells that will die. And each hair cell acts as, let's say, a key on a piano, where your first key would be starting off with your high frequency or your treble, okay, your ting-ting sounds.
Yeah.
And moving through deeper, so your flatter sound waves travel further, all right? So your deeper, lower frequencies will be interpreted right at the vortex of the cochlea. And they're kind of the last ones to be affected. So your first line of defense will be taken out first, and that's your ability to perceive your high pitch, treble-type sounds. So as you succumb to hearing loss, you will lose those sounds first. That's why as people start to become deaf and they start to sign, they will also kind of be in a transition phase from talking and communicating that way, talking and listening to signing. So they will still be talking, but they will start to mumble in a deeper tone. And that's only because that's all they're able to hear.
Yeah.
They've lost the high pitch, high frequencies, and they'll start to mumble in a deeper tone as they start to lose that form of communication, move over to signing. So definitely a factor, and there's outside of that, there are frequencies that humans cannot hear that maybe some other animals can, which is quite interesting.
Awesome. Jared, thanks so much for all your knowledge. I think, I really hope it adds value to the listeners. I think it is enough, or it's valuable information that can start letting people consider what they are, what their part is in safety. 100% agree with you that putting an earplug in halfway doesn't achieve anything by making the safety officer happy. I do think it's a bit linked to ego, in my perspective. I think sometimes we don't want to seem like we need safety, so there's a bit of an ego to play with that, which doesn't make sense because, like you've said, I mean, you're just hurting yourself in the future. On that note, I mean, this is the final episode for the season, So we just want to thank everybody. We've had some really cool engagement from the listeners. For the next season, obviously, our goal is to make sure that we are increasing safety. So bringing on experts like Jared, the purpose for that is to get the very best of knowledge in specific elements of safety. What I'm going to ask is if there is any comments that you might say, look, if you did this a bit more, it would add more value to me as a listener, to me in keeping people safe, to me in procuring PPE, whatever your part might be in it, to me using PPE, like we've just spoken about. Please do share those. We really want the show to add value to the listeners. We can only do that by having really solid feedback. And hopefully when we get that, we can make the show better in the next season. So thanks again, and we appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jared. Thank you for joining us, and I hope this episode added value to you. If you are experiencing any safety challenges on your sites and require any additional information, please do leave us a message on LinkedIn via Protector Safety Gear's page, or alternatively follow the link below and share a message with us, because maybe it can create value or valuable conversation for future episodes. Be sure to also follow us on LinkedIn. There will be some valuable information shared from today's discussion.